What's going on, Chop Nation? I am your host, JB, with my co-host, Jeremiah James. Welcome to the next episode of our sports podcast, your favorite sports podcast, Chop Talk. We are so excited to be here. Jeremiah, we're on episode 3. Can you believe we've almost been doing this for a full month, every week, almost. For almost a month now? I have greatly enjoyed this, and this has been awesome, man. What do you think? Yeah.
I would say, consider we talked about it for 3 years, I think 3 weeks in is pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
I feel like we should be on episode 300 at this point, is me telling
you. No doubt. Well, yeah. Before we even begin, we just want to thank, all of Chop Nation for, watching our YouTubes. We are so excited, so excited as of midnight last night. Mm-hmm. We got the emails and now we are on a lot of platforms, Spotify, yeah. Podchaser, iHeartRadio. So now we're on all of these different things. So any of your favorite podcasting sites, you are able to go on there and you're able to find all of our episodes and we make sure that we update you. So again, thank you so much for just showing us love and support. We're very, very humbled to do what we do and to take the opportunity to do what we do. And, we have an awesome show today with another great guest speaker. So let's just get right to it, man. Lots to go on, and Chiefs news and current Knoll news. So man, what you got? What's going on in Chiefs Kingdom this last week?
Well, quick shout out to Chiefs Kingdom. Love y'all wherever you happen to be. There's quite a few of us out there, but I got three things, JB, I kind of want to talk through this morning.
Okay.
Number one is we have re-signed defensive end Mike Dana to a 3-year deal.
Okay.
Big news. He's a big player. It's a $24 million contract, $13 million in guarantee. He's only 26. He's a young guy, right? He had career highs in terms of quarterback pressures. He had 41 last season. He had 31 stops. He had 28 hurries. And he had 8 sacks. And
wow.
He had a career high 74% of the team's defensive snaps. So clearly he's been in rotation. He's got the rings, and we're very happy. Along with Chris Jones, Mike Pinnell, Derek Nottie, and Tershawn Wharton, five of the guys that we needed to sign in the free agency. We've got them all signed now. So we're bringing back the core of our defense, Chiefs Kingdom. Let me hear you. We can't hear him.
That's right.
Obviously,
shout out to Derek Nottie, though, former Florida State guy.
Yep. Amen. Absolutely. This isn't my number two, but I want to just say that we re-signed Clyde Edwards-Helaire to a 1-year deal.
I did see that. Yes.
You saw that? Yeah.
I did see that one.
He'll continue to be a backup role for Pacheco, obviously.
Yeah.
We're still searching for RB2. He's going to be probably RB3. He just doesn't he's a good running back. He just doesn't stay healthy,
Yeah.
He seems to be out half of every season. And you can't have that. You just can't have that happening. So that's number 1A, 1B, I suppose, JB. Number 2 is, and this is kind of big news coming out of Jackson County, Missouri. Last week, the voters rejected a stadium sales tax. Do you see that?
I did see this.
It wasn't close, JB. It was 58 to 42.
The voters said,
you're a billionaire, multimillionaire. You pay for your own renovations. Thank you. We don't want a 3-cent sales tax here in Jackson County, which, I mean, honestly, I can't blame them. If you're making billions of dollars and you own an NFL franchise team like the Kansas City Chiefs, why should people that live near the stadium have to pay for that? I can see where they're coming from. You know what I mean?
They could pull out the money for the renovations out of their pocket. Let's just be honest.
Probably.
You know what I mean?
They say it's 800 million. There's no way it's 800 million. I've seen the renderings at Arrowhead, what they're trying to do. They must be padding, just lining the numbers. That renovation's maybe 300-400 million. Maybe.
Okay.
They're not doing enough bids is what I'm saying. They need to be
bids.
So what happens now is this leaves the city's team possibly looking for other avenues of financial help, obviously, which they probably could take it out of their pocket, or even more drastic measures. They are up in 2030, so they could look to move physical locations in 2031. And I don't know if you saw this, but Eric Johnson, who is the mayor of Dallas, has been on social media saying, hey, listen.
Yes, trying to get them to come there.
Listen, hey, come on down. Lamar Hunt started here. You know, there were the Dallas Texans in the 1960s. Obviously, you know, he moved the team to Kansas City back in 63, and he renamed them the Chiefs, and the rest is history. But there is a precedent for the Chiefs in Texas. What are your thoughts on that? I'm curious.
It's no different than any other sport right now. You know, you're trying to go with where the market is, where the money is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Kansas City isn't and Jackson County probably isn't necessarily the biggest market compared to, like, say, Dallas. Right. However, you know, the team is right now in a dynasty level right now. So, you know, the money is there if that's where you're wanting to actually keep what you've started. You know, the money is there. If you're willing to put forth if you're willing to pull out your pockets and pull out your wallet, then the money is there.
That's right.
To move to a place like Dallas, again, is just you're moving to a bigger market, but you're losing your base. You're using your base fanhood there in Kansas City. It's like, why does anybody want to watch the Kansas City Chiefs from Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, they've already got the Dallas Cowboys there, you know, and that, you know, considered quote unquote America's team, you know what I mean? So it just wouldn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, I get why it would make a lot of sense to them on a financial and business front, but I consider myself like a man of the people. Like, even when I go to, like, Florida State games and stuff, I like to be down in the grind with all the fans. So that's kind of where my level of fanhood is. So for me, if I'm somebody like yourself and somebody part of Chiefs Kingdom, I'm like, absolutely not. I do not want to see this thing move to Dallas for the mere sake of money. Like, yeah, you can build a market, you can, you know, whatever, but it's in Texas, it's in Dallas, it's not Kansas City, Missouri. You know what I mean? So no, I don't agree with it. I mean, I get it. Yeah, he's making a business move there by reaching out, right? And making a proposition.
Well, I hope Clark Hunt is listening to Chop Talk right now and he's hearing what you're saying, because I think your sentiments echo what we're all thinking in Chiefs Kingdom. We just really don't want it to move. The fan base is here, like you said. We've got a 6-state market that we pull from. It would just be, it wouldn't be the same, obviously.
Yeah.
There's the other possibility of moving it out of Missouri. You know, obviously there's a Kansas City, Missouri, and a Kansas City, Kansas. And developers across the state line have proposed a much shorter move, right? They're talking about bringing them over to near the Kansas City Speedway. The Kansas Speedway, the Children's Mercy Park, and then the Kansas City Sport and Soccer. There is just a great space over there for them to potentially just build something brand new and do something different with Kauffman Stadium there for the Royals, as well as Arrowhead for the Chiefs, who share the complex. So there's some things up in the air. You know, we've got a little bit of time. 2030 is not around the corner, but you know, I personally don't see them moving. I see someone making the deal. I see them pulling the $400 or $500 million.
I do too. I think they're going to pull out the money.
Yeah. Well, whether or not they stay where they're at remains to be seen. They may actually move across the river. You know, they move across state lines. We'll see if Kansas puts something together or not. But number three in terms of Chiefs news, I know we got to keep moving. We got a lot to talk about today, is the Rashee Rice update. I don't know if you've been following this.
No, I did not see any updates on this one.
Okay. So just a quick update for everyone. If you haven't been watching this, been living under a rock, 6-car crash, Dallas, Texas. It was caused by the Lamborghini. Rashee Rice has already said that he was driving that car. The corporate was registered in his name. So he was doing a little, speed racing at 6:20 on a Saturday. He faces potential third-degree felony charges, which carries a possible sentence of 2 to 10 years in prison in the state of Texas. That is just for the crash itself. Leaving the scene would cause a separate issue for him. Mm-hmm. Especially since it was an accident, involved injuries. That's a 1 to 5 potential if the injuries are not regarded as serious, and 2 to 10 years if the injuries are deemed serious. So it depends on how injured the people were in that crash, right? And then they found a very minor amount of marijuana that was in the vehicle.
Oh, man.
But I read on this that charge for that amount listed would be a Class B misdemeanor, and more than likely the state of Texas wouldn't have anything to do with that. That would more be NFL violations and policies, and probably a 2 to
code of conduct
game suspension, more than likely. So that, in a nutshell, is the update for Chiefs Kingdom, and be praying for Rashee Rice and his family, and see how this plays out. He said, I apologize and taking full responsibility. So that's always the right call.
Now, he was the, wasn't he was your leading receiver. He had more yards than Kelce did.
He did.
Yes, that's a big piece to lose. You know, chances are he's going to miss some time, you know, before the beginning of the season.
Right.
So yeah, that's going to be interesting how that ends up playing out. So yeah, that's crazy. So yeah, a lot of craziness coming out of Chiefs Kingdom. And you know, I'll say, you know, one last thing before we move on to some Noel news. When it comes to relocating, right? So even the Rays have been, you know, in Tampa have been looking for a new stadium. Tropicana Field is a dump. Mm-hmm. And they've been looking to build a new stadium. And I don't necessarily know what's been going on with Tampa as far as, you know, making that happen. But there has been a lot of talks with the same as what you were talking about, just moving them a little bit to like trying to build a stadium here in Orlando and moving them here to Orlando. And it's like, you're still within your surrounding area of a market, right? You know, we have a lot of people from Orlando who travel to go and watch a Major League Baseball game. That's your closest Major League field. And so what it's the same as like a basketball game. So like the Orlando Magic sell out a majority of their games, but in being a diehard fan and going there to these arenas, I can tell you that a majority of those fans are all like tourists. They're coming from overseas. And that's what, you know, that's the market here. So that's what, you know, business wise, that's what gets people in the seats. And, you know, they're doing much better this season, you know, for sure. But even in the past, when they haven't necessarily been doing the greatest, you know, they've still filled the stadium because of where the location is. And so the Rays will certainly be able to fill a lot more of their stadium, you know, moving it to a more public area like Orlando. But but I can at least see that more so than like moving, you know, to a Dallas. But anyways, I'll leave that one at that. Noel's news, week three. We'll see how all that plays out moving forward. Noel news, they just had their second and final scrimmage of the spring this past Saturday. A lot of great things coming out of it. A lot of pluses, some minuses, but again, you know, you're in early spring. You haven't even hit the summer or anything like that, you know, so you give you give grace to a lot of that. But when you have Florida State coming off a season that they have, and everybody's just very particular, right? They all want to see you do the same exact thing that you did last season. You know, we're just in the second scrimmage. So again, you know, don't take any of this, you know, real heavy at this particular moment. Want to first touch on the injuries coming out. We have a couple of kind of bigger name guys that are going to miss the rest of the spring. Sophomore wide receiver Destin Hill, which I kind of talked about him the first episode. Yeah. Is a great receiver, but body is made of glass. Like it's just so hard to keep him healthy. He did play, I think, around 10 games last season. Yeah. You know, on and off. You know, with you know, Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson. You know, he just kind of took a backup role. You know, with those two receivers, but losing them coming into the season, losing him to the draft, we are really looking to him to kind of step up. And again, you know, just struggling with the injuries. Don't really know what it is. There's a couple places that rumor him to possibly be out all the way until the beginning of the season, which would not be good. You know, missing the whole entire, you know, spring and summer. He's out. He's out for the spring, at least. Mike Norvell is terrible with disclosing injuries. So it's almost like he has to at least disclose that a player has one and potentially how long they're out, but you'll never find out what it is in the severity of what it is. He's terrible at that. Always has been. It drives people like us crazy. Cause like, we're trying to figure out what it is and how long it might be. And he doesn't say anything. It's literally like, okay, Destin Hill is going to be out for the spring and we're going to continue to monitor his injuries going forward. And that's it. That's all he'll say about it. And you won't get anything else. So I love Mike Norvell. Shout out to Mike Norvell. But yeah, dude, you're terrible at disclosing injuries. it's crazy.
There goes our chance of having him on the show, JB.
No, I love him to death. Diehard Bull fan. So it's really imperative to try to keep Destin Hill healthy. So, you know, hopefully it's nothing, you know, really bad and we can get him back for some good numbers here. Tight end Jarrell Powers. He didn't play a ton. He played in one game last season, really didn't record any stats. So he's not, you know, like a big name guy. But again, as I stated, though, we lost a lot of firepower on the offensive side at wide receiver. So it's really imperative that we try to keep as many people healthy as can be.
Right.
Defensively, earlier, this was earlier, I think either last week or the week before, redshirt junior defensive tackle Joshua Farmer and senior offensive tackle Robert Scott are both out for the remainder of spring practice, although they should be ready for the summer. So that's good news because those are our big name starters for our team. Those are big staples that we need on the offensive to defensive line. Yeah. So we need them to get happy and healthy. So let's I'm all down if they're but it says that they should be ready for the summer. So hopefully it's just kind of maintaining whatever lingering injuries they may have.
Right.
Last week I touched on the first scrimmage and how, like I said, DJU wasn't as impressive. You know, he made some of the more difficult throws, you know, look easy, but then, you know, had a lot of pressure on him. He didn't make a lot of the easy throws that he should have made, check downs, easy reads, things like that. However, coming into this particular week, though, head coach Mike Norvell was greatly impressed with the second scrimmage, showed a lot of growth from last week to this week, stating it was his best day. So that's a quote from Mike Norvell. It was his best day. Stated he, again, this is a quote from Mike Norvell. He had great control and what he wanted to do down the field and showed great confidence. So that's great. Cause again, he's probably going to end up being our starter. So that's great showing, you know, going forward that he's picking up on it, right? You know, the spring is for the playbook. Everybody trying to get onto the playbook and get on the same page. Good to see that he had a great scrimmage, you know, going forward. The wide receiver group has been a little bit behind the eight ball. He's really challenging the wide receiver room to next man up. Like who's going to step up to the plate and try to be that guy to really show, you know, that you want this opportunity and to seize this opportunity. So we have a lot of firepower coming in, you know, most notably senior Malik Benson from LSU or from Alabama, excuse me. And so, yeah, we want to, we need somebody to kind of step up to the plate. We lost a lot of firepower, and especially with the new QB, we want to make sure that we, you know, we have these wide receivers really stepping up. Yeah. It's hard to make up for what we had last season with Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson, right? Yeah, really. And you come in and you bring in a new QB, you lose Jordan Travis. So we do have some veterans that are on the team, but it's like, all right, now you're with a brand new QB, a QB that you've been with for like, you know, the last three or four seasons, if you've been here, you know, all 4 years. So it's a lot of brand new stuff, learning the playbook and so on. So we certainly get it. And I think that they're going to be really strong coming into, you know, coming into the beginning of the year. Cause I really think that with Mike Norvell, he's going to really shape things up to putting some pressure on and get these guys stepping up. On the defensive side, redshirt freshman defensive tackle KJ Sampson Jr. Is really impressing Mike Norvell this spring, and especially considering injuries to Joshua Farmer, you know, that's good. That's good that we have somebody like him who is able to, because on the defensive tackle front, Farmer is going to be a big piece. So if KJ Sampson can certainly do some damage and really step up to the plate there, you know, with Farmer being out, then that's great. So he appeared in five games in 2023. We redshirted him. So that's all that he played in. And, so shout out to KJ Sampson. Keep on keeping on, man, impressing Mike Norvell and working hard. We got to have these guys step up, man. We just lost so much as a team that we just have to have these young guys just stepping up, to taking on those roles and just realizing what can come from Florida State if you really put the talent and seize the opportunity. That's a big thing for Mike Norvell, seizing the opportunity. Right. Yeah. Shout out to those guys. Something that was a little fun is coming out of the running back room. So the running back room is getting a much needed boost after losing Trey Benson to the draft and a couple of others. So we have Lawrence Tolofili coming back. He had 118 yards in the Orange Bowl. You know, was a great piece to our offense running back wise all season long. So it's great to have him coming back for another year. But there's competition amongst some of the younger guys. Most notably, who is the fastest guy on the team? So we have a couple really fast guys like wide receiver Destin Hill, wide receiver punt returner Duspan. These guys are fast. And but we just picked up an Indiana transfer, Jalen Lucas. He's the brother of wideout Ja'Kai Douglas on Florida State. And so they asked him if Destin Hill, they asked Jalen Lucas if Destin Hill was still the fastest guy on the team. And he kind of chuckled. He was like, "No, I am." And, you know, so it was fun to kind of have this this friendly banter and competition as to who's the fastest guy. He was the 2022 Big Ten Return Specialist of the Year. I think he ran back something like, I mean, don't quote me on it, but like five touchdowns, you know, return for five touchdowns. Yeah, so he's just super fast, super quick. They actually clocked him at practice running 22.8 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And so DJ Lundy, what's that? 22.8 miles an hour. That's fast.
Yeah.
That's moving. And DJ Lundy, who's one of our fullbacks and also plays defense, stated that there was running and then there's Jalen Lucas. So that's awesome to see. Yeah, the little friendly banter, you know, coming out of practice and just at least having some fun in that. So yeah. I'm excited to see what's going to continue throughout the summer. Again, we struggled with injuries big time last season. So that is one of the biggest things I'm praying for this coming season is, you know, we have the potential to really put a lot of great pieces together to really make a good run coming up. But people have got to stay healthy. We just don't have the depth, in my opinion, that we did last season, and the cohesiveness from, I mean, we had everybody coming back last year from the season before. Yeah. So, it was better. You know, you had guys that had played with each other for a long period of time. So you had that next man up and still had that cohesiveness there. Yeah. So you're kind of losing that a little bit coming into the season. But I think that our schedule is favorable. So, again, just excited to see and hear all of this. A lot of the positive things, but you know, you see the injuries and you're like just shaking your head because, you know, it's like, here we go again. It's already starting. That's coming out of practice, last scrimmage and moving forward into the spring. So super excited to see, but that's all I got on the Noles front here. Segueing a little bit into basketball. What a Final Four game last night between Iowa and South Carolina. I ended up watching a majority of that game. Can you believe the viewership that these games are getting? Like even Iowa, UConn. Yeah.
And UConn as well. Right.
Iowa, UConn got like 14 million viewers.
Yeah. They're outpacing NBA finals. They're outpacing World Series games in terms of viewership. You know, the LSU Iowa game last week had what, 13 million people watched, 12.9, something like that.
12 to 13 or something like that, 12 point something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's it's amazing to see because, you know, there's always so much like emphasis put on, you know, girls sports and trying to get, you know, more viewership and to get it to rise to a higher national level, you know, compared to where, you know, the men's sports are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of these females and these rivalries like the LSU Iowas and things like that. And South Carolina just being, you know, in their fourth or fifth straight Final Four. And it's just finally creating a great narrative. You know what I mean? Yeah. To bringing in great viewership. And so this was a great season that brought in a lot more individuals. It's been funny to see Iowa's run and see actor Jason Sudeikis, Ted Lasso. Mm-hmm. He's a big Iowa fan. So he's been following around Iowa and Caitlin Clark for the last couple of seasons. So he was interviewed by some of the UConn women. So I thought it was great. You know, at the end of the day, though, when I was watching the game, it looked like, Iowa put up such a fight. You know, they're so fast and they've got shooters, obviously, other than Caitlin Clark. But it was it was interesting to see just the size difference So like the leading person for South Carolina, Camila Cardoso. Okay. Mm-hmm. She is 6'7".
Yeah.
Okay. She had like 17 rebounds in the game, and she just towered over everybody else. So they played a great, South Carolina played a great inside game with her. She rebounded great, a great inside game. It was just, she was just hard to stop. Iowa's tallest player, I believe, is 6'3", 6'2". So she was easily 4 or 5 inches taller than the rest of them. And so it, the size there was just, was impeccable. You know, Caitlin Clark still put up 30 and 8. What's that?
Yeah. No, I would say when you talk about, you know, the size difference, if you have that many offensive rebounds, you're going to win the game. I mean, it's just,
oh yeah,
you can't not win the game with that many offensive rebounds. Right.
And, for sure.
Yeah, go ahead. I was going to finish on some.
No, stats. I was just going to say, I mean, even Caitlin Clark had 30 and 8, but she put up 18 in the first quarter.
Yeah.
So they literally held her to 12, you know, the following three quarters. So they really did a good job putting the clamps on her and shutting her down. I think they took a page out of UConn's playbook. You know, UConn and Gina Auriemma had a great game plan for Caitlin Clark. And she only put up, I think, like 20 points in that game. But they've got a lot of players that really stepped up to the plate. You know, so shout out to those. Shout out to the both teams. You know, great Final Four game, great championship game. Shout out to South Carolina for winning. Just such a tough team. Undefeated the whole entire year. Just kind of made it look easy. And the game was close until about, you know, halfway, three quarters of the way through the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And they just started to run away with it.
Well, Iowa came out strong. Did you see the first? Was it 12-3 or 12-2? I was like, oh, here we go.
It was like 20-9 at one point. Yeah. I mean, like they came out just slinging. Caitlin, like I said, she put up 18 in the first quarter. You're like, if she keeps this up, she's going to drop 40 on them. And they're not going to know what to do because she's unconscious right now. But they made the necessary adjustments. You didn't see it at LSU, but you saw.
I was saying I should so far behind 3-point line.
Oh yeah. So how do you
adjust? So far behind the line, I thought we're. that I think they should have a 4-point line for Caitlin Clark.
Right. It's like a separate line for her. Like she's got to shoot behind this line.
Yeah.
It's not a three until you shoot. What's
at the end of the day, they just didn't have the numbers, right? The Iowa shot less than 40% from field goal.
Right.
You know, South Carolina was about 48. You know, three-pointers, she did well, but they only hit 40. They hit 42. You know, they were better on the free throw line. Iowa is at 80, and South Carolina was at 52. But they almost doubled their rebounds, 51 to 29. Yeah. Defensive rebounds, 33 to 22.
And assists, huge size difference.
Block steals.
So he cut out again. He's on Jeremiah's on location from Kansas City, you know, his hometown. So until he comes back in here, we're gonna be moving forward here to way too early 2024 NFL playoff predictions. We have our guest speaker waiting in the wing. So we're gonna introduce him here in just a couple of minutes. But we're gonna do one last segment before we bring him on. And it's the way too early 2024 NFL predictions. So here we are. We're in the spring. We're about to get to the NFL draft. And we just thought we would take a shot. We'd see, based on the regular season last season, what we got going forward this season, and see what our thoughts are. So I'm going to go ahead and go first here. And actually, you know what? We're gonna take a little change here. So one of our other things that we're gonna talk about here was the NBA playoff picture. So I'm gonna save the NFL for when these gentlemen come back on, and we're gonna talk about the NBA now. So the NBA is shaping up, the playoff picture shaping up here. We have about four games left heading forward till the end of the season, start of the play-in tournament. So really excited to see that. Obviously, being a very big Orlando Magic guy, then I'm really excited they now moved up to third in the East. So greatly excited about where they where they're going, what they've done going forward. And I got Javier reaching out to me here. I think he wants to join in this fun conversation here. Since we have Mr. Jeremiah is stepping away here with some technical difficulties. We're going to bring him in. So our guest interview today is going to be with Mr. Javier Sola, great friend of mine. We're going to be touching on a discussion here the rest of the way after we do this called Prioritizing Sports Over God. Essentially, the culture that sports, most notably within kids, is becoming a higher priority than God. Travel ball on the weekends and so on. And again, this is not a judgment area, but this is just a plain and simple. Javier has great experience working with children and kids, like most of the older kids, is a sports chaplain at Oak Ridge High School and has done a lot of work with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. So we brought him on to really give his input on the culture of sports within the realm of kids, especially those that are older. So, but before we get into that conversation, he wants to come on and give us his predictions. So I'm going to get him on here. Mr. Javier, welcome to the show. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Jared. Thank you for having me on.
Awesome to have you, my friend.
Yeah, pleasure to have you on. It's good to see you in your Knowles gear. I actually brought some Knowles gear for you to kind of suck up to you. So I want to show this here. This is my Derrick Brooks signed.
There you go.
And then this one you're going to appreciate, legend, but also my favorite football player, Tampa Bay Buccaneer player all the time.
Got to be Warg Dunn. That's right. Warg Dunn, baby. That's right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
He's the reason why I became a Bucs fan.
Yes. That's awesome.
And I wore my Buccaneer shirt to remind Jeremiah that we are the only team to ever beat Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. So, yes.
Hey, JB, cut his feet right now.
Yeah. Yeah, right. we're going to exit him out of here.
Having you on the show, Javier.
Hey, I mean, come on. Jeremiah, while you were you guys are winning all of them. Let me have mine, man. Let me have mine.
Yeah. We're just messing around.
Not only do you get the Bulls, you also get Taylor Swift too. Come on, man.
Oh, listen to him. Yeah.
Spoiled.
Our personal judgments are aside, so we will have what conversations about Taylor Swift that we need, whether or not we really want to or not. But that is true.
Speaking
facts, Jeremiah.
Yeah. I'm just messing around. Listen, we love the Bucks too, right? We're Floridians. We love the Bucks.
Yeah. All right. So before we get into this conversation, we wanted to have a little bit of fun here. So we're going to go through some NFL predictions, way too early 2024 NFL predictions. And then we're going to have a little fun. I got a game called Over Under that we're going to play rapid fire 1 minute that we're going to play. But let's go through this first. Let me pull this up here and let me pull up my notes going forward here. So what we're going to do is we're going to go division by division, and I want you guys to give me your input while we got about 5 or 6 minutes for this, and tell me each division, a lot of trades, a lot of free agency moves, big moves already this spring moving into next season. So next season should look very, very interesting going forward. Right. All right. So we're going to start with our AFC East division, Bills, Dolphins, Jets, Patriots. Javier, we'll start with you first. What do you think?
Yes, AFC first.
East. Who's coming out of the AFC East?
I'm going to go Floridian here. I'm going to go Miami Dolphins. I think this year they got great continuity. You know, obviously we are pre-draft, so depending on where they go on defensive end in the draft, I think it's going to make a difference for them. But seeing just I think the transition in Buffalo is going to hurt Buffalo more than they realize. I don't think you just like put in a bunch of rookie wide receivers and expect to be a vibrant offense with it. So I think that continuity on offense and just get some pass rushes in there to get after Josh Allen, I think it's going to be their year.
Yeah.
Right on. Jeremiah, what's your take?
Oh, no, Javier is completely right. I think the Bills are going to be in transition. They got rid of a lot of their defensive players already to free agency. You know, the Jets, you know, another Achilles heel accident. They're one accident away from, you know,
Yep, I agree.
The Patriots
all right.
are still rebuilding, obviously. So I'm going to have to go with the Dolphins. You know, they fire well on offense. They have some there's some opportunities there for them, but I do think they at the end of the day.
I completely agree. I think that they literally had the same record as the Bills last season. So I think that they make, you know, the adjustments that they need to really give Tua some protection. I think Tyreek Hill comes out and still has a great season. Mostert coming out and having a great season at running back there. And I think losing Diggs is going to be a bigger, Like everybody thought, you know, when Patrick Mahomes was losing Tyreek Hill, you know, there's a lot of people that just thought, okay, they, you know, they're done. Their dynasty is going to be done. That's their biggest threat, you know, moving forward. But they had other weapons and then went and picked up other role players around, you know, the guys like Travis Kelce. And then obviously Isaiah Pacheco come out being a very solid running back. And then you have Patrick Mahomes back there. So nothing against, you know, Josh Allen, but he just can't do everything on his own. And he's got to have some decent role players. And, you know, they'll be competitive still, but I just don't think that they're going to be the team that they once were. And I do think that this is going to be the Dolphins' year. All right, moving forward, AFC North. I think this is a pretty easy decision here, but Ravens, Browns, Steelers, Bengals. Javier, what you got?
You know, this one's going to be my hot take. I think the natural consensus is going to be the Ravens. You know, they're a very strong team, but we see, you know, it's not the same every year. So my hot take, I'm actually taking the Bengals in this division this year. Joe Burrow's going to come back. Right. One thing you know about Joe Burrow, he always plays with a chip on his shoulder. So coming back from an injury, you know, everyone's going to be down on the Bengals, you know, the T. Higgins thing. So if they pick up, you know, one of those first round wide receivers, you know, to go a trifecta there, you know, I think Joe Burrow's going to well their way into another division title.
Jeremiah, what you got?
Yeah, I'd probably say I agree. I think the Bengals will do better than 9-8 this season. I think the Ravens are still pretty strong. So while the Bengals may make the playoffs as a wild card team, I do think the Ravens clinch in the AFC North.
Yeah, I agree. I think that picking up Derrick Henry, huge pickup. And so that is going to alleviate some of the, I mean, you're not wanting to take away who Lamar Jackson is as a runner and being able to, that's how he rolls. That's the way that he is. You're not trying to make him just a pocket passer. He's got to be able to move and be free. And that's how he moves the ball down the field. But finally having a decent running back and a Derrick Henry, although probably a little bit more near the end of his career ish, still putting up, you know, some major numbers, and is certainly going to help on that side of the ball, alleviating some of that, that pressure on Lamar Jackson. So I do see them coming out of that division, out of the AFC North this year. I think that's one of the more, I wouldn't say easier ones, but when you're looking at the Browns, Steelers, Bengals, I do think that the Bengals do a much better, to Javier's point, than 9-8. So I see them giving a run for their money. Losing Joe Mixon to Houston, I think is kind of a big deal as well. You know, Joe Burrow come off of injury. So I'm hoping to be surprised. I really honestly am, and have the Bengals make a run for it. But that's my pick. Yeah. All right, AFC South, Texans, Jags, Colts, Titans. This is kind of an up in the air one too. Javier, what you got?
You know, I think this division is going to be closer than people realize. I think the Colts are a team that people are sleeping on. You know, the Jaguars are the Jaguars. They just got to figure out themselves. But, I mean, it's hard to deny C.J. Stroud in his historic rookie year. Yeah. You know, getting Stephon Diggs, DeMeco Ryans has proven to be a head coach, you know, for the future. You know, so I'm taking the Texans, and I'm going to go above and beyond and say my Texans are my sleeper team for the Super Bowl this year.
Wow.
So I'm all in. I think, you know, I'm looking at them AFC championship or bust for them.
Okay.
I saw CJ Stroud tear up my Buccaneers, you know, in that game. And I was looking at a 6-year veteran in his prime, man, making his like 9th NFL start. That guy is just absolutely superb. With it, you know, they improve their offensive line. They got them the weapons that they need. You know, Joe Mixon, Damian Pierce, Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Dalton Schultz. I mean, it's just a dynamic offense. And the defense with Will Anderson Jr. But the thing is about their defense comes down not just to stars, but to your system. And they have a great system with DeMeco Ryans. He's a defensive head coach. He's not going to let them slip. You know, I think that team's going to think they're going to roll through that division.
Yeah, no doubt. No, I completely agree with you. I think this is their year. They showed great promise, even with what they had, you know, last season. So now they bring in guys like Stephon Diggs and Joe Mixon. I think those are crucial pieces to helping them get to that next level. And they shined and shocked everybody with how far they got last year. So I completely agree. I think this is their year.
Well, I got to say that I'm happy that all the talking heads have the Texans. Everyone's talking Texans, AFC, right? Going to the Super Bowl, and I'm okay with that because Chiefs Kingdom already knows this. We play better as the underdog. Yeah, we're the two-time Super Bowl champions. Yeah. But I hope it's the Texans. And I hope we go five years in a row at Arrowhead in the AFC Championship game. So
should we just skip the AFC West?
Because I want to prove everybody wrong for a third year in a row.
I think we should just skip the AFC West on that note. Just say the Raiders are going to take it and we move on.
Yeah.
All right, last pick. We know where this is going. AFC West, who we got here? We got Chiefs, Raiders, Broncos, Chargers. Pretty easy pick here. I'll even start it. You know, I just don't see any competition, you know, for the Chiefs. The Raiders are still trying to put things together. The Broncos, you know, they're trying to figure out life right now. I think the Chargers are going to do better than 5-12 and make a better run, you know, in the AFC West. But just with what's going on with those three other teams, I just don't see, you know, where the Chiefs don't come out on top again.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I think the Chiefs are good at, you know, they're going to go 13-4, you know, 14-3 this season in a weak division. Now, I will say that the Chargers are going to be really tough games. You know, everyone talks about quarterbacks from Harbaugh, but it's really his defense and run game that wins some games, you know, and he has a proven track record everywhere he's gone. You know, so I think the Chargers will be a wild card team. You know, I think those games are going to be actually Chargers Chiefs is always entertaining. You know, are always entertaining game, you know, type thing. So I think it's good. Those are going to be hard fought games, but I think the Chiefs come out and roll with that division.
Do you guys really want to hear my pick?
I think we already know what that is.
I'm just going to put this number up for everybody who's watching the.
Sure, go for it.
That. My fat finger is 9 AFC West Championship titles.
Yeah, modern day dynasty.
It'll be number 9 this year. Number 9.
All right. So for the sake of time, because we want to get into this this great discussion, we're going to skip the NFC at this particular point. We know who's going to come out of it anyways. It's going to be the Bucs.
Let's let Javier make choices, though, out of the NFC.
Okay. All right. So I want to get to this game before we have this this discussion. So I want us to be cognizant of time here. So we'll just do Javier. All right, Javier, NFC East, Cowboys, Eagles, Giants, Commanders. Quick picks.
You know, I'm going to take the Eagles on this one. I think it's the Saquon pick in there. Now, my biggest concern with them losing Kelce and Fletcher Cox, you know, not just two stalwart players, but also leaders in that locker room.
You know,
really the leaders in the locker room. I think they're going to have to overcome it. But I think they still got a ton of talent. You know, I'm never going to put money on the Cowboys to do anything. You know, I learned that lesson.
Especially in the playoffs.
So I'm never going to put, you know, money on the Cowboys. I think Giants are in shambles. You know, Commanders are in shambles as well. So I'm going Eagles.
All right, NFC North, Lions, Packers, Vikings, Bears.
This is probably one of the tougher ones here because you got so many teams that are here. I can be talked into three different teams, I think, in this division. But since you're putting me on the spot here.
On the spot, quick picks.
Yeah, I'm going Packers.
Okay, not a bad pick.
Yeah.
Not a bad pick.
I'm going Packers. I mean, you have to, the odds say about 2/3 of the division champions rotate every year. So you can't pick repeat champions in every division.
That is true.
Packers.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Our favorite division in all of the NFL, the NFC South, Bucks, Saints, Falcons, Panthers. Javier, we know what we're going for here. We stick together with our Buccaneers.
See, here's the thing. I'm going to surprise you guys. You know, I think this is the toughest call because I think between Bucks, Saints, Falcons, you know, they're all played pretty tight. You know where my heart lies. I want a four-peat. You know, I'm going to put up my skinny fingers here and say four-peat for the Bucks. You know, but my head is saying, you know, like getting Kirk Cousins in Atlanta. I mean, they had a good defense last year. It's really hard. He's a great leader.
However, they just lost Calvin Ridley.
Yeah. You know, but they got – and they're sitting there with the 8th pick. If they pick up like a Roma Dunze to be their number 2 in the draft, I mean, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Like, it's so – like – you know, my head is telling me the Falcons, you know, I'm like Jeremiah here. I like to be the underdog rather than the favorite. So I'm going to pick Falcons there, you know, but it's going to be a really tight division. I think it's going to come down to the last 2 weeks of the season between Saints, Falcons, and Bucks.
Which it usually does for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Last but not least, NFC West, 49ers, Rams, Seahawks, Cardinals.
I'm taking 49ers. You know, I'm taking 49ers. Yeah.
I got you. So that's a pretty easy win. All right. Yeah. So I wanted to play this game with you guys. For the sake of time, we'll get the both of you guys. Just shout it out. So this game is called Over Under. So I'm going to give you guys 5 receivers and 5 running backs. The numbers that I'm going to throw at you are very close to what they did this past season. So they're not just some like astronomical crazy numbers. and you're going to give me the over under. You get 1 minute to answer all 10, and I'm going to read it out to you, and you're going to give me the over under.
Hold on now. Hold on. What's the bet? Let's make a friendly wager, JB. Now, come on now.
Well, so we can stay. So yeah, I mean, we can sit here. This is all recorded, so we know who who's going to be closest and right throughout the end of the season.
If we're right, more than 50%, you're wearing a Chiefs jersey for at least one Seminoles game.
Oh, I'm playing this game.
Below 50%. We will wear the Noles.
This was more so for if we know our knowledge. This wasn't a. I'm not playing this game. I'm giving this to you guys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm giving this to you guys. But yes, we'll come out with something better. That yes, I'm down for that. We can make a little bet. I've done that before and lost, unfortunately. Tennessee and Florida State way back in the early 2000s. Florida State lost in championship to Tennessee. I had to wear a Tennessee shirt to school.
Oh,
so, yeah. I've played that game before. All right. So we're going to set a minute on the clock and go. All right. Stephon Diggs, over under 1,100 yards with CJ Stroud.
Over.
Over.
Okay. Amon Ross St. Brown, over under 1,400 yards with Jared Goff.
Under.
Under.
Marquise Brown, over under 600 yards with Patrick Mahomes.
Over.
Under.
Ooh. All right, Keenan Allen now with the Bucks, over under 1,200 yards with possible rookie Caleb Williams.
Under.
What was the yards again, Jared?
1,200.
Under.
He was at like 1,180 something, I think, last season. Mm-hmm. Calvin Ridley now with Tennessee, over under 1,000 yards.
Under.
Under.
All right. All right, Derrick Henry, over under 1,000 yards with Baltimore.
Under.
Over.
Joe Mixon, over under 1,000 yards with Texas, with Houston.
Over.
Over.
Over, yeah.
Okay. Saquon Barkley, over under 1,000 yards with Philly.
Under.
Over.
I like the difference. Christian McCaffrey, over under 1,400 yards again.
Under.
5 seconds.
Under.
Isaiah Pacheco, over under 1,000 yards.
Over. Over.
All right. Woo, with the nice. Nice, nice. I like that. That was fun. That was fun. So great, great NFL news. It's always fun when we can bring some NFL into the spring since it's like so far away. We're going to sit there and we'll work on some NBA stuff, I think, next week. We'll touch on the NBA playoff picture. We want to have some time here to talk with Javier, switching gears a little bit. We know that we like to have these guest interviews and talk about some in-depth cultural things within sports. And so last week we talked on the culture of professional sports to some degree and had a great interview with Mr. Darren Seward, who was a former Kansas City Kansas State tight end.
Okay.
And he had some great insight on how the Lord worked with him throughout his career in the high school and college realm, being winning 4 state championships, going to college, trying to get into the pros, and how his faith really worked through. So Javier, tell us a little bit about your history with working with kids.
Yeah. So I have been a student pastor. I was a student pastor for about 14 years, 4 years, kind of part-time internship, 10 years full-time student ministry. But in that time, though, I had a really unique sports role within my student ministry. So, and I'm not an artsy guy. I'm not a music guy. So sports was always my outlet to connect with students. So I was always at football games, working with FCA in schools, you know, coaching anywhere I can to be around sports as a platform to share the gospel. With the two, I currently have 3 kids, 9, 7, 5. So I'm starting to get into the youth sports culture. You know, my oldest son, he's a baseball player. So he's just now getting to that time where it's like, okay, how many camps you want to go into, you know, travel ball, all of that, the pressure that you're feeling for my kid to play. I feel that right now with it, but also I've counseled many students, you know, either through chaplaincy or just through the church about balancing that faith sports dynamic. Also in my personal life,
amen.
You know, when I was in high school, I was part of a state championship cross country and track team. So I know what it means to in high school, right, to devote, you know, essentially a part-time job to your sport, but also balance your faith and what it takes to get into high school. I actually turned down Division I scholarships, opportunities so I can focus on my studies and my faith. you know, with it. And we can get into that a little bit. So I'm really in the thick of it right now from a kid's perspective. In my current role as Discovery Sports pastor, you know, I run youth and adult leagues, you know, as ways to share the gospel through sports. But also, no, we sit here and we talk through how can we give our kids a higher level of sport that goes beyond just the rec or grassroots level in what we do, but doesn't compromise their faith. So how do we marriage the sports and faith dynamic together?
Mm-hmm. That's good. Because you see that the general culture outside of sports is becoming less surrounded by the Lord, right? God is being pushed out of schools, out of life. Overall, the higher hierarchies within this country, not to name names, you know, overall, they want to push the culture that even the biblical foundations this country was pushed on weren't there and didn't exist. And so wanting to completely shun and shy away from involving Jesus in any which way into any form of life. So I completely agree with you there. And I think that that's awesome. So with that history that you have, the big question that we want to talk about is prioritizing sports over God. True or false, are kids' sports becoming the new priority over God?
You know, that's a really broad statement to say. I would say, you know, I think we need to first take a subset, you know, when we look at families, because not every family is a sports family, you know, with it too. But I think that there is a higher thing we need to look at is that where we see our kids' worth found. Is it found in extracurricular activities or is it found in God? I think that's the bigger question that we need to ask. And with that subset, we have sports, ever right now. And, you know, I would say this, that I don't want to speak for any family and say it has become their God, but it has become their fear. I can definitely confirm that it's their fear that if their kid isn't involved in sports at a high level, they will be left behind. Therefore, they will be behind in high school. Then they will not get college scholarships and then they can't pay for school. So because of that fear, we overexert our kids into sports so that they don't get far behind. Because now, you know, I mean, I don't want to age anyone here on this podcast, but back in the 80s, 90s, like your sports trajectory was through school. Middle school, high school, AAU, travel, all that was really just a really niche thing. Now that has become the norm where AAU, especially in the basketball realm, is actually taking kids out of high school to focus on their team over high school. So even the academics is doing it because they're being told that, like, if you don't play on my team, your kid's not going D1. Your kid's not going to college to play sports. Right. That's what's being told us. So there's a fear that's coming in there that if you don't go above and beyond, and I've seen it as well, where if kids don't, you know, play on the weekends, so say their family is, you know, highly religious, highly faith-based, where they go to church on Sundays, if their kids don't participate on Sundays, they get benched.
Right.
Well, my kid is one of the star players. You know, if he gets benched, not only does the team lose, so all the parents are upset with them, but now they're getting behind because they're not playing. And we all know that in sports, if you're not playing, you're not improving, you know, with it. So I think it's more of a fear based where the fear comes in, where there's this idea of validation in a sense, like my kid's worth is built in sports.
Right.
So through that fear, then it gets elevated to the point where it becomes their God, but it's not a conscious decision that says, hey, I'm choosing sports over God. It's that the fear is elevated to the point where I believe that my kid is most valued and worth through sports. Therefore, it supplants God in their life.
Yeah. That's a good take.
Which makes it an idol, doesn't it?
I mean, it absolutely makes it an idol.
Paul's idols, you know, that's very much the case is in our household. Yeah. It's, you know, anything that comes before the Lord is an idol. It could be as small as, it could be a sport. Yeah. It could be, you know, worshiping a person. You know, money, whatever, love of money, not money itself. Yeah. But you guys know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this happens not just in sports. I think this happens in a lot of other extracurricular. I think dance is a big one, you know, where we see like these dance companies there too, you know, music, anything where you want to see your kid excel to the highest degree, you can place there instead of, you can replace that with sports and get the same results, you know, with it there too.
We were just before the show, I was playing Jeremiah a clip from David Pollack. David Pollack is a well-known football player, professional football player, was a host on College Game Day for a while. Yeah. Really strong man of his faith and a guy that really has no filter, you know, really straightforward guy. And I enjoy listening to him. And it was a clip there where he was having a discussion, I think, at a church or some type of congregation regarding the same topic. And he said, you know, 0.02%. Make it into the pros.
Absolutely.
He said that 100% will stand before God.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he said 100% of kids will hang up their cleats at some particular point. But what percentage of them at that particular point, you know, are going to then enter the kingdom of heaven and making that choice? And so he said, you know, he said, this is going to be a hard take for parents, because this isn't a judgment. It's just to say, where is your priority within your home? So, you know, he said he's had some parents come up to him and say, hey, well, we talk about God in our home. And he said, you know what? That's great. Congratulations. He said, but if you're prioritizing sports on the weekend over church and over God and not allowing them to be within that atmosphere, then you may be saying it, but that's not what you're showing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, so you can say it all you want, but actions speak louder than words, and you're not showing them.
Amen.
And I feel
Jared, that. I think you're true there, because what David Pollack is getting at here, and I remember him, he was a great player at Georgia, got drafted by the Bengals in the first round, you know, so he's a man you should listen to when it comes to this. Like, he gets it.
Oh yeah.
Especially undersized. So he had to work at everything. He had to work at everything. So he put in the work for, so he gets it. And it's what he's getting at here is, like, as parents, what are we attributing as the greatest defining attribute in our kids?
Right.
You know, because when we prioritize sports or whatever that extracurricular activity, we're saying that the most defining thing about you is that object.
Right.
You know, and if it's not God, then it's out of place.
Right.
You know, so what we're essentially teaching our kids is that you will only find worth and love based on how you do on a sports field. You know, if you're playing baseball, you're only going to feel love if you get that base hit or you get that home run or you make that out. Yeah. You know, it's not who you are in sight of God. Because you're saying, out of all the things that we can do when pressed and all this, and we all know who we're made of when we're stressed, you know, and at the end of the day, we're going to choose sports over God, you know.
And it becomes an identity thing at that particular point.
It absolutely does.
Right? Where do you find your identity? So you have these athletes, and it's no different than some, like, major careers. Mm-hmm. But you find, you know, military and so on. Yeah, you have the same thing, you know, when it comes to sports. It's you, if you have nothing else but that is defining who you are, or that you have found a great force to define you, then you're using your success within those sports to define who you are as a person.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It comes down to identity. And, you know, when we see this in professional athletes, why are some athletes stick around their sports for so long? Because the idea of not playing that sport anymore. Steve Young actually was on Monday Night Football talking about Tom Brady in the 2022 season, and said, retirement is like death. He said, retirement is like death. Like, something dies in your soul when you stop playing this sport. You know, what does that say about the nature of sports in our life when it is like death?
And his point was, with the percentage of individuals that actually make it to the pros, you have to, it not only does it come with talent, but it comes with hard work. It comes with absolute 100% devotion in every aspect of your life. So half of these people that have made it to the pros that are, you know, that are great position players, they have spent their whole entire life where their life literally revolved around this. They can tell you from the time they were 8 or 9 years old in every single league that they were in, every single year, nonstop, practicing all the time, like the effort that goes into being able to be good enough to get into the pros. And that's if you even have the talent to. Forget the hard work. You can have the hard work and just not have the talent enough to do it, or the size, or whatever the case may be that sets you apart. And so then at that point, you know, you have completely missed the mark of where your identity is and where your level of devotion should be. Now, again, I'm not saying that, you know, if you're really enjoying something such as sports, that you're not putting in 100% effort. Like, it's no different than anything else. If you're if you're in there to be a winner, then you're in there to be a winner, and you put forth your effort. But the conversation we're having today is that, especially with travel ball on the weekends, all of us have heard of the standard that's being set. You don't play all weekend long. You don't play on a Sunday, then you're not a part of this team. You're going to be benched, you know, so on and so forth, because we want somebody who's going to play the whole entire season, not just, you know, one game over the other. And it's forcing these parents and these children to choose one or the other. Yeah. Instead of being able to sit there and say, okay, well, I love sports, but sports doesn't define who I am.
Right.
And so I just happen to be a person of faith, a Bible believing person of faith who plays baseball. And I'll use that, you know, while I'm playing baseball or while I'm playing basketball or whatever sport you're playing. But instead you're forcing them to just choose, you know, sports over God in that particular season of life, whether or not that season continues, you know, throughout your years of life or whether it's a one-time thing, but for whatever, however long that season of sports lasts, that's what they're being forced to choose.
Jerry, I want to take a moment here and, you know, and just speak to the parents with younger kids. And I'm talking younger, like still elementary age. So fifth grade and under, that this starts when they're 7 years old.
Yeah.
Like what you just mentioned starts when they're 7 years old, you know? So, and as a parent who has a 9, 7, and 5 year old, you know, their identity is still being filtered through who the parent says they are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, with
sure.
it.
Yep.
So when you sit there and you have these conversations with these travel teams, they say like, hey, we want you for the whole season and all of this, like you're shaping your 7, 8, 9, 10 year old now in a sense of like, what's most important to the identity I found within the view of my parents, you know, there. Like those are opportunities not to devalue sports, because we're not talking about sports. Sports do play a role. And I believe that sports are a form of worship. You know, Romans 12:1, right? Let's offer ourselves, our lives, as living sacrifices. Holy, please God, this is your spiritual act of worship. Sports can be a form of worship to God. So it's not just saying that sports absolutely. Is bad, but it's the proper perspective. So when you teach a young child the value of sports in your life, you know, see it as a form of worship. You know, one of the things that, you know, we do, you know, with my kids, I ask them after every game, you know, I go, how do we define success on any sport field or anything you do? And I ask them three questions. Like, did you have fun today? Did you work hard? Did you do your best? And were you a good teammate? I go, guys, if you do those three things, no matter what happens on the scoreboard, you had a successful game. Because sometimes you can't control the score. It just doesn't go. You have a bad bounce, right? The other team just has a great game. You don't define yourself by the score. You know, it's by your attitude and the way that you're viewing and treating other people on that field.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what's pleasing to the Lord. And trust me, like as you get, and I told him, as you get older into higher level sports, those are the type of teammates that everyone wants to have on their team.
Yes, sir.
You know?
Yep,
that's right. Everyone absolutely wants to have on their team. They want someone who's going to give their 100% effort all the time. At the end of the day, say, hey, good job, you know, and pick up their teammates when they're doing it and have an attitude, because sports at the end of the day is a game.
Yeah.
It's meant to be fun. Yeah. So go out there and have fun, you know, and live it, because that's what it's there to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, start at a young age instilling those type of, find your values, right? Bring in those biblical values into sports in a way that shapes their identity around the proper place of sports in their life as a form of worship to God.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's really well said, man. You actually answered the last question that I had down here, which was, what is your advice to parents whose kids are involved in weekend sports? So I greatly appreciate that.
If I can add one more thing to that,
Jim. Yeah, go for it, man.
As your kids get older, you know, I think it's really important that, and this is where I struggle. And so I'm going to say, this is where I struggle as a parent, because I'm a guy that, you know, I want to go 100% all out all the time. Jared sees me out there on the softball field. He knows I'm not a baseball player. I'm still going to give my best effort. Yeah. You know, when I'm with my kids, you know, and when I'm throwing a ball in the backyard, that's a parenting moment, not a sports moment.
Yeah.
And it's so easy for me
to be critical
of my kids. Why aren't you catching the ball? Do it the right way. And all this. I got to remember, like, I'm their parent first, not their coach.
Right.
Yeah.
I am their parent. I am their biggest cheerleader first.
Yeah.
Not their coach. Yes. Yeah. Do they need to be coached? Absolutely. We want them to have the right form. But if my attitude is constantly being critical, I'm going to suck the joy right out of my kids.
Yeah.
And David Pollock actually said that at the end of his video. He said, you have so much clout with your kids.
Yes.
He's like, you really want to waste that on sports over God.
Yeah.
And so I think that was really well said. Jeremiah, did you have something you wanted to add?
Oh, no. I would just want to say, Javier, we appreciate having you on for sure. And just great words of advice. And I really hope this touches the hearts and the minds of all the parents that are listening to this.
Yeah.
I really agree, man. It's been a great conversation with you.
For the parents, don't go at this alone. You know, parenting is not meant to be done alone. You know, we're better together when it comes to parenting, you know, the two, and live out your values in a way that loves other people towards Jesus. Let's not be critical of other parents involved in sports. Let's love them towards Jesus and show them that, that their identity can be found in God, not in sports.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Amen. Well, man, we really want to thank you for coming on and being a guest here on our show. You know, this is such a, we have, all three of us have kids, right? So it's a crucial thing, you know, with where society is, you know, it's important for us to talk about where the culture is and culture shifts, because as you said, this all starts when kids are little. And so the culture is much different now than when we were 6 or 7 years old. And so it's imperative now that we are in tune, you know, and aware of where the culture of life is and of, you know, school, sports and everything at a young age, you know, for our children going forward. So we can, you know, really get before the Lord and pray and ask the Lord how to navigate, you know, through that culture and make the right decisions. So you have shown, you've said a lot of great, encouraging words for those parents out there and really shed some light on where, like I really liked, what you were talking about with fear. And I really think that will resonate amongst a lot of parents, you know, who might be at the very beginning stages of this with their kids and might try to help put them at ease a little bit, you know, with where life is. Because the biggest thing that we want out of this conversation is to just encourage, you know, where you're finding your identity, and that there's nothing against, you know, travel sports and travel ball and so on, but where exactly are you getting your identity? And, you know, we want to encourage finding your identity within the Lord. And sports second, but being able to use that identity in Christ during your sports journey. So even if that leads to success, and even if that leads going to the pros, fantastic, that's great. Right. But relying on your relationship with the Lord, that being first priority to get you through that particular point. So again, we really, really thank you for your time. Hope you had some fun here with us today. And we really appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, man. It was a blast. Thank you guys for having
me. Absolutely. You have a good day, man. And again, thank you for being a part of our show.
Sounds good. Thanks, man.
Take care, Brad. All righty. So that's going to wrap up our show for today. We're so glad again to have Javier come on the show. Great topic. Great topic. So we're really glad to have him on. He is such a, with kids of his own, you know, in sports and just what he does within the community and at, you know, your local schools, you know, he had a great insight into that, you know, much more than I do. And so I think he said a lot of great things. So again, we thank him for being on our show for today. Before we sign out, Jeremiah, you got anything else?
Nope. I would say, as always, stay prayed up, and we've got some pretty phenomenal guests. So stay tuned, like, and subscribe.
Absolutely. And again, if you're new to our show, I'm going to put this banner up here. You can reach out to us at chop-talk.podcast on YouTube. And as we said at the very beginning of the show, we're now on Spotify and our iHeartRadio. We're trying to work on getting onto Apple, Podchasers, Podbean. So we're on a lot of your favorite outlets or podcasting outlets. And so we really appreciate all the love and support that you've given us. Again, you can email us at choptalknation@gmail.com. If you have any, we would love to hear from you guys, your, you know, gripes, grievances, concerns, but more importantly, just your support of topics or just your support of the things that we've talked about. So feel free to email us at any time. And again, we thank you all for being a part of this show. Stay tuned next week. Just a little teaser. We're going to get into NBA basketball news and playoff news. We're going to talk a little bit about the men's Final Four that's happening tonight at 9:20. And then we're also going to get into a big discussion, which I can't wait to talk about because I have so much to say. We're going to start early and fast, and because I have a lot to say on this, on the transfer portal and NIL deals within college football. So very, very big, in-depth talk, very heated discussion on the way next week. So again, stay tuned. And again, thank you all for being a part of our show. Have a great rest of your day. God bless.